And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, presented by Access Golf. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Hope everyone's doing well out there. I know last couple weeks we've been showing some of our training programs, digital training programs, giving everybody a little sneak peek at that. A couple weeks ago we showed Operation Baby Draw. That's my number one training program, and for different reasons. I mean, Operation Baby Draw fixes a lot of things, a lot of common mistakes that we see in amateur golf. And then last week was Total Driving. I actually think Total Driving might be the best one of them all. 10 videos specifically on the driver. So hopefully you enjoyed those. Check them out. Give you a feel for about three or four of the videos of the 10. Kind of walking you through some of the most important parts of that digital training program. And I saw a lot of you go to the website to sign up for the digital training program itself, the entire 10-video series for Operation Baby Draw, and then also the entire 10-video series for Total Driving. Also have Operation Drip Fade for those that want to hit that power fade. Not the wipe fade, the power fade. And a lot of you, some of you struggle with that push-hook combination. It's a great program for you there. Got a great show here today. Lucas Wald is going to join us. We're going to get back to our guests. We've taken a little bit of time off here with some of the guests. I've had a lot of things going on here in Ponte Vedra. Catch you up here real quick before we bring Lucas in. Of course, the studio is going great here. I've got another studio that's going to be opening downtown in Jacksonville. Super excited about that. 4,700 square feet in the River Place Tower on the 20th floor. It's just awesome. If you followed me on my Instagram, you've seen some videos that I've been posting. We plan to open probably the middle of August, somewhere in there, maybe late August into the 1st of September. But it's around the corner here. We're probably looking at, two and a half months, and the doors will be open there doing lessons, a little bit of club fitting down there, clinics, of course, and then a lot of events. Super excited about doing a lot of, golf-specific events or corporations, off-site meetings, happy hours, things like that. So it's going to be a great spot. Fourscore is going great. A lot of you know that a partnership here in Jacksonville. Fourscore is a great tavern here in town. Built a brand-new spot there, Gate Parkway. I was actually there this morning. It was day one of our first junior camp there, which is fantastic. We're doing lessons there, kind of an extension of the two studios. With more simulators. They've got six simulators there, great restaurant, great food, bar atmosphere, TVs, music, you name it. Going to be doing a lot of cool stuff there. So that's up and going and moving in the right direction. So, a lot of things happening there. And then we've got one more thing on the hopper. I can't give you the full details yet, but it's going to be really cool. It's going to be the final piece of the puzzle, a green grass property that is going to hopefully bring all the studios together that can interact with it. And then that's going to be it. I mean, that is probably going to be it with the two full-time studios, our partnership with Fourscore, and then hopefully this this green grass property. I was I took a little trip up to Myrtle Beach this last week. A little guys golf trip, four of us. It was good fun. I don't do that too often. But I actually set this one up, which is kind of unlike me. I, made the call up there. Barefoot Lodge, great spot there at Myrtle Beach. I've got four courses and made the call up. And the guy gave us a great deal to bring my buddies up. And we stayed right there on property, played three of the four courses, and just had a blast. I would do it again. If you've never been to Barefoot Lodge, you should check it out. It's a great experience. The condos were fantastic. The golf courses were a lot of fun. The hospitality was great. Of course, got a little bit of good food. We stopped in Charleston on the way up. Ate at Leon's. If you ever go to Charleston, go to Leon's. That's a good spot. I mean, that's a really, really good spot. Stayed the night there and then made it into Myrtle. A few people knew I went up there. They're asking how I played. I didn't have really any expectations. I got fitted for a driver with my partners here at TruSpec, and my guy got me dialed in for a driver, the new Callaway Elite, and I drove the ball well. I mean, I drove the ball really probably as well as I have in quite some time. The first day I was a little bit erratic. I knew I was going to have to knock some rust off. We got rained out after 11 holes. I was, you know, it kind of all over the place, made one birdie, too many silly bogeys. So I was, I don't know, 3 or 4 over par going into the 12th hole, and then lightning hit. Came back that was on the die course. And the die course is penal, as you can imagine. Then we came back, played Norman. Norman was probably my least favorite of the four. I didn't see Fazio, but I've heard Fazio's, it's a good course there. But, you know, Norman, I hit the ball much better. I drove it much better. Hit a lot of good wedge shots, made 4 birdies. You know, you're doing gimmies and things like that. I don't know. I was probably, you know, 1 under par even, you know, in playing the Norman course, but I hit the ball much better there. And it was funny. And I go through this, like when I play, and I think probably a lot of you can relate to this, but it's easy to overthink it, right? Especially, you know, those that come in here and they take lessons and they're trying to, you know, kind of work on their game, and it's hard to transfer it out to the course. And that's a hard thing to do. And you can imagine as an instructor, you know, I'll get going down these rabbit holes too. But it's always when I can just kind of, you know, dial in on something very simple that, you know, obviously translates to a better impact condition is when, you know, I start to go. I get into these ruts where I feel like I have to really rotate and open up at impact. Like for some reason, you know, I'll get into this cycle of, you know, getting open at impact, which is kind of a trend in golf. And, you know, I mean, more times than not with amateurs when you're developing them, you want them to try to, you know, you get things organized in a way where, you know, they can start to get into a better impact position, stay plugged in and rotate. But for me, when I try to rotate more dynamically, I tend to lose the center of the face, which is kind of interesting. But when I focus on just making a good turn going back, and really the idea of almost kind of staying just a little bit more behind it and even a bit more square, I hit my little draw. Now, I'm not someone who's leaning the shaft way forward. Now, I've got a little bit of shaft lean. But I tend to, when I really open up, I tend to spin out of it. I tend to hit it on the toe a little too much. I don't shift my weight as dynamically into my left foot. And so it's funny, you know, when I think back to when I do, you know, play like this 3 days in a row, which is unlikely, I do seem to kind of fall back into the simplicity of, hey, good shoulder turn going back, left shoulder behind the ball. And then impact, we're going to be a little behind it, not so opened up. Left shoulder is going to hang in there a little bit more at impact. And then I can hit my little push draw. It takes my path a little more to the right. My weight shift tends to be a little bit more in my left side. I hit it more in the center of the face, et cetera, et cetera. And so I really got into a good rhythm of that. And in hitting this nice draw on my driver, I mean, my God, I pounded my driver, honestly. Into day 3 on the Love course, which I want to spend a couple minutes on before we bring in Lucas. The Love course is great. I really enjoyed the Love course, you know, mainly because I hit the ball really well that day, made some birdies, again, probably right around even par, 1 under. And, so that's, you know, I was happy with that, right? Now we weren't playing way back. But I was happy with the way that I kind of, you know, brought it together, focused in on what worked for me, and was able to transition that into some good drives, some good irons. My short game was a little spotty. My touch was not great. But I did, you know, I felt like I putted okay. And so it just ended up being really a fun trip up there to Barefoot. And again, I highly recommend it. You know, my favorite course was the Love course. Then, you know, I think the Die is really good. Didn't get to play Fazio, but it looked great. And then the Norman was just kind of, you know, it was just kind of blah. It was there. It's one of those courses, I think, you know, it can make you feel good, right? It's just everything's kind of in front of you. Just step up and just pound your driver, which is fun too. So, look, great spot, good food, Myrtle Beach. I did it, and I'd probably do it again. All right. So we got a lot of stuff to get to here today. And I'm excited because it's been a little bit. Lucas, of course, a great teacher out there in LA. We are going to be looking at a lot of swings, a lot of previous champions in the U.S. Open. You know, so we're going to be bringing in Rory McIlroy. We're going to be talking a little bit about Victor Hovland as well, who didn't win the U.S. Open. I know, but Victor is someone who worked with Lucas Walt years ago. So I want to dig into that a little bit. Bryson, of course, two-time U.S. Open champion. We're going to be taking a look at his move. And the list goes on and on. DJ, I want to ask him about that. I want to ask him about DJ and the decline of his game. Matthew Fitzpatrick, interesting swing, course won the U.S. Open. We'll be looking at that, what you need to know about his particular pattern. And then some of the things that I think Lucas teaches really well, we're going to be looking at some of those videos. So a lot to get to. And without further ado, let's bring in the man, Lucas Walt. All right, Lucas, there he is, just off the lesson tee. Thanks for spending an hour with us, man. I know you're busy.
Thanks for having me, Travis.
Yeah, how many a day right now in the studio there? I know you got an indoor studio there in L.A.
Yeah, like 3 to 5. Okay. If I go more than 5, I think I'm pretty much dead for the night. But
yeah. So, because you taught outside right before, and now you're inside, and I made that transition, about 2.5 years ago. I mean, I still do a little bit outside, but.
Yeah.
You know, full studio now inside with video and, you know, launch monitors. I mean, it's been pretty awesome. What have you learned since making that track?
I mean, I think, look, anytime we can remove the outcome of a result of a golf shot and get people more just focused on movements and sequencing, I found it to be very beneficial to the student. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can shank one indoors and it doesn't bother you on the next shot. So I feel like they can detach much quicker indoors than outdoors. And we can really get some movement and practicing in and focus on feedback with the body motions as opposed to only a golf shot.
Mm-hmm. So we got the major championship this week, U.S. Open. And, you know, Rory, of course, wins the Masters, Scotty, the PGA, Bryson defending this week, and then, of course, the Open Championship next month. Of the four, what's your favorite right now, would you say, of the four? What do you enjoy the most?
The Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not – I mean, Sunday afternoon watching the Masters growing up with my dad – that was just the in April. That was my jam for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, U.S. Open though. I love the British Open. U.S. Open coming up at Oakmont. I think, look, Bryson, what, top four out of the last six majors? He's had top fives. I think he's going to be right there again, Travis, this year, coming off tied for fifth at the Masters and then a second at the PGA.
Yeah, it's impressive. I mean, he's always had the long game. We know that. You know, the iron game probably hurt him a little bit at the PGA, but, you know, his short game has shown some growth. And of all the guys that moved to LIV, you know, Bryson, there's no question, I think, has excelled the most. I mean, there's been, I think, a lot of guys, you look at their play since going over. I know we'll take a peek at DJ Swing. He won a U.S. Open. We're going to look at some previous champions of the U.S. Open. But Bryson's maintained his focus and he's found his voice, you know, in the digital, and he's certainly shown up in a big, big way, you know, as you alluded to in these major championships two times now. He's won the U.S. Open and, you know, here's his swing. And, you know, I watch your stuff, Lucas, on Instagram, and you can check it out at Wald Lucas, W-A-L-D Lucas. And this is a swing, leg action. There's some things you like in this move, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I'll give you just a little backstory to Bryson. Chris Como is a good friend of mine, a friend of yours, I think, too, Travis. Chris came to a golf school I put on in 2018 in Kansas City. And Chris came as a student wanting to learn how to hit the ball farther himself, and it was incredible. He went from 104, 105 all the way up. I think we got him maxed out at 114, 115 clubhead speed. But he also wanted to learn how to do it himself so that he could teach some of these motions to Bryson from a sequencing standpoint. So it's really been cool to watch. I don't think they're still working together, but it was really neat to watch what Chris was able to do. Even if you guys watch Bryson next week, watch his initiation of the backswing and how he triggers and mm-hmm. how he has motion leading into the backswing. It's not just a real static, robotic looking backswing. He has motion. He has a full hip turn now. His left heel comes up on the backswing, full right hip internal rotation, thoracic extension. He's across yeah. the line. I mean, he's lengthened his backswing. They're all power elements that they added. And this dates way back to like around COVID. And it's stuck, and it's cool to see him pretty much dominate when he plays on strokes mm-hmm. gain, strokes gain off the tee.
Yeah, you see it here. We've got his video up down the line, and you know you see that little window open up right
yeah.
there in between the knees. Oftentimes, when I get people in here, you know, I'll put them in front of the mirror, and I'll show them with the mirror kind of off to the right of them. I take it up to the top, and it's like, do you see a little window opening up in there? And you know, so many of them, of course, don't. And they start creating some movement in the right hip. The left knee starts to travel across a little bit more. The heel might come up, and all of a sudden, a little window opens up, and now they've made a much deeper turn in the right hip. Do you use that as a checkpoint at all?
Yeah, 100%. I don't know if you've seen that Swiss ball drill where I put the Swiss ball on their mm-hmm. sacrum and have them rotate the ball. But yeah, that checkpoint on getting the window between the legs is a key move in that backswing pivot. I like to bring up models of the past, like a Ben Hogan or Arnold Palmer or Jack mm-hmm. Nicklaus. And I'll show those guys from down the line, even like a modern, like Bubba Watson, from, you know, when he was dominant on tour. DJ, he dropped back into that Terrell hip as well.
Yeah.
So I would use a lot of models and just show them what they do and say, it's okay to turn your hips. It's okay to create the window. You know, mm-hmm. these, if you look back at Mickey Wright or Ben Hogan or Jack Nicklaus, you know, though Sam Snead, they pretty much all did that, what you're showing in Bryson. And if you look at Bryson 2016, 2015, he didn't do that. And so mm-hmm. it's a testament to him to be able to make those changes as a pro golfer and to see it stick. That should be encouraging, I think, for amateurs to be like, I can do this too. These guys are already world class. I should be able to change this. And we see it every day in here.
Absolutely. I want to kind of build on this a little bit with some of these speed elements. And I'm going to play this video that was on your Instagram, and we're going to play it through. You may not hear it, but let's just let it play through first, and then we're going to come back to this and fill in the blanks. So what we just saw there, okay, at the top, we saw two different trail. We saw the trail wrist, and then in one of them, the correct way, take us through what you did to the trail wrist.
Yeah, so a lot of amateurs have been told to tuck this trail elbow in at the mm-hmm. top. Okay, and so having this sort of trail arm, my right arm as a right-handed golfer, and not letting it go out this way is a big power element that I think is being stripped from a lot of amateurs. So all I'm showing in that video is that it's okay to let this elbow fly a little bit and look like Nicklaus, okay? Mm-hmm. Look like Daly, look like Freddie Couples, look like Vijay Singh, look like Phil Mickle. All, you know, mm-hmm. we can go on and on and on. We're trying to basically tie this arm down. Look, there's been some great golfers do that, but for most amateurs, they need to develop club head speed, Travis. And this is a quick way to get this arm out. It does help provide a little bit more speed on the downswing.
And it really has a great net effect to the shaft, too. I mean, it like you'll see, oftentimes I'll see with players, you know, kind of take it back, and then they know they're trying to kind of, you know, be in here, and they'll wrist bent, and then you'll see the shaft kind of run off and lay off.
Lay off, right.
Yeah, and then they get laid off and the turn gets shorter, and then they, you know, then most time the shaft steepens some in transition. And so that very video that you just showed, oftentimes will show, you know, that same thing with a student, let the elbow kick out a little bit, even feel the wrist maybe turn a little. And then all of a sudden they feel like the shaft's kind of a little more across the line. And it's amazing just in doing that, Lucas, how it encourages that better turn.
Yeah, chest, like some chest expansion too.
Yeah.
Like getting that right, letting this trail wrist turn back. Okay, a little bit of pronation. Letting the trail wrist turn, cross the line. That allows your chest to expand. It gets you wider. It gets you across the line, and it lengthens the backswing. That's the other thing too. It, like this short sort of arm motion here, and you're trying to keep the wrist very compact, I guess, that will shorten the backswing. So if you look at, again, I use those power guys and longevity, Travis, like if you look at Tom Watson.
Yeah.
So Tom Watson at age 59 basically hit the shots to win a British Open. You know, if you remember in 2009 when he hit the 72nd hole, I mean, he striped it. He didn't get up and down and lost ultimately, but longevity, like these longer backswings across the line, full turns, Watson, who else? Vijay, Phil Mickelson, Freddie Couples. These guys are competitive. I mean, Sam Snead too, he won at age 62 on tour. So, I mean, Tom Watson at 59, Snead at 62. Mickelson, you know, he just finished top five, I think, on Liv last week. But I wouldn't be surprised if Mickelson's in the hunt U.S. Open.
Bryson, you know, longer cross.
Longer backswing.
Scotty Scheffler.
Scotty Scheffler. I saw your post with Scotty and Bryson and Rory all across the line. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Of course,
I get, well, you don't have to be across the line to play. No, I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying in general, like, these are the track that you go down oftentimes. And I think for amateur players who are listening, I mean, these are things you can learn to do. You don't have to be this, you know, 27 years old and like perfect shape. I mean, you can get some range in your trail hip, let the right side of the pelvis climb a little bit. You can use your right wrist, right elbow, the same. I mean, you can do these things and get yourself much more organized to the top. And all of a sudden the downswing becomes a little bit easier. Here's a picture. This is one that I kind of, as we kind of move along here to a picture of Xander, I think, you know, back to Chris Como, you know, I think Chris has lengthened out Xander, you know, to the top of the swing. And, you know, I think Xander would get a little short and the club would point a little short of parallel and left at the top. And you look at Xander now, I mean, this dude could pound it out there. And I'll tell you what, I mean, it's got to be 95% of what he's done in the backswing.
Yeah, I don't see the video up there, but yes, I know that Chris has definitely lengthened Xander's backswing. He's also allowed him, he doesn't do it every time, but lifting the left heel. Like I have some video of Xander at Riviera from last year, the Genesis, where his left heel was coming up. And it's pretty cool to see him change a few things in the lower body mechanics, which actually frees up the backswing to go longer. Mm-hmm. A little bigger hip turn, letting the left heel comes up. That will actually free up to let the backswing go longer.
Yeah, can you see this picture now? You see that picture?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Look at that.
Yeah,
so, wow. Yeah, so, that's really cool.
So look at that picture on the right of Xander. Look at that. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, really cool. And he's got a little window there between the legs like you talked about. Yeah, we talked about that earlier. So really, really awesome. Good stuff.
I think everything we just discussed, I think Xander's probably doing that a little bit more right there. And I'll tell you another guy, Sahith Theegala, same thing. I mean, he gets it, you know, he'll get a lot of runoff in that shaft. And I've seen him, I sat there and watched him at TPC warm up. And I, you know, you could just see the depth in the hip and the turning of the shaft, trying to get it more across the line and all that.
And I played with Sahith just a month or so ago in a charity event here in California.
Okay.
And we talked about a little bit of that, the height of his hands. He's like, I'm constantly trying to get my hands up. He also talked about the trigger move. If you watch him starting out his backswing, he has a lot of motion that goes before the backswing. Mm. And I was like, are you conscious of that? And he said, at one time I was conscious of that, but now it's sort of ingrained that I don't even know I'm doing it. And I asked Gary, it's funny, Gary Player, Mr. Player, I should say, called me one time and had me come down and caddy for him. It's a beautiful story. I was driving down the freeway and I get my phone rings and he's like, Luke, this is Gary Player. And I was just like, oh my gosh. And so I get off the freeway, take this call. But he asked me to come caddy for him, Travis, and just because he had played with a student of mine and he was impressed by her swing, Victoria Lovelady. But anyway, we talked about his trigger, and he, again, didn't even really know that he kicked that right leg in before he goes back. So you guys should watch Bryson next week because Bryson is doing that similar trigger of kicking that right leg in, straightening the legs before he goes back. It's a powerful move that I would advise amateurs to look into.
Yeah. So talk about that trigger. Are there others that you kind of gravitate towards? You'll see some shuffling almost, like the long drive guys, like the Humpty Dumpty, like where they're going back and forth, you know, and they're creating this movement and this momentum.
Yeah.
Are there one or two that you really gravitate towards?
One or two swings or one or two moves?
It's kind of like little triggers, movements that get the swing going.
I like the trail leg to kick in a little bit. I think for the most part, if you as a right-handed golfer, it'd be your right knee. It's a little running start that you're creating before the swing. So if the right leg as a right-handed golfer kicks in, then it creates a little bit of, like you said, momentum to get pressure into the trail side before you go back into the lead side. So a little trail leg kick before you go back, and you'll see Bryson do that. You'll see Gary play. Even Rory does it a little bit too.
And speaking of Rory, he's won a U.S. Open. Here's a dude that doesn't try to get it more across the line. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, Rory tries to get it a little more laid off at the top, but pay no attention that he's one of the greatest drivers of the golf ball, and the shaft points a little bit right. It's funny with Rory because I've talked about this in previous episodes where, you know, I've got some footage of him where he's really rehearsing, trying to get it laid off and, you know, a little less deep. And I'm not saying that's not wrong. I'm just saying that's, you know, Rory is not a player that is trying to get it. Like I just showed you with Xander or Sahith, things that we just talked about. But it's funny with Rory. Like I always thought about this with Phil too. Phil would say, yeah, I'm working on X, Y, and Z. And then he'd go to hit it and you wouldn't see any resemblance of what he just said. And totally. I think Rory's the same way. I think Rory's like, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, I'm feeling this. And he's tried every swing device. But at the end of the day, when Rory won the Masters and when he won all the major championships before this, I mean, he looked just like this. I don't think I've ever seen a swing where Rory got the club even remotely close to being laid off.
No, I mean, if you go back to 2011, 2012 and look at Rory's swing, I mean, to me, those vintage, that is just like one of the purest motions I've ever seen in golf. So I feel like, you know, sometimes him even going back and looking at some of those swings would be great advice for him when he gets off a little bit. Instead of trying all these gadgets, I would just encourage him to go back and look at when he was dominant in the game. And I mean, it's great to see him win the Masters. Love Rory's action. Mm-hmm. Love his lower body. Cross the line. We both like, you know, Rory takes. So he, speaking of the in and over move too, Rory always took it more straight back. So
yeah,
it's a wide, little different. We had lunch one time and he said, you know, I love watching Snead and Bobby Jones and those legends go in and over. He just said, that's not the way my swing works. And I wouldn't tell Rory to take it in and over right now. No. But definitely he has a little different backswing than say like a Bobby Jones or, you know, Hogan or Snead and Palmer and some of those guys.
Mm-hmm. I want to play this video. Here's another one. I want to transition to the downswing. This is a video you did on the downswing recently.
Stop with the nonsense of creating width on the downswing. The best and most dominant of all time, Hogan, Nicklaus, Bubba, Rory, go narrow on the downswing. Ditch the club. The dance move is the quickest way to feel this. Wide to narrow, wide to narrow. Save this and practice it the next time you pick up a club so you can play better golf.
Yeah. The dance move. Tell me about the dance move.
Yeah, I couldn't hear that video, but basically what I'm trying to do and showcase in that at video is it seems like there's, and you can tell me what you think on this, in golf instruction right now, there's a move towards trying to get width on the downswing. And I see, I'll have amateurs come in and they've watched an Instagram video, they've watched some kind of piece of instructional advice, and they are literally trying to take the club shaft and go wide on the downswing. Because I, like, look, if you're a professional golfer and you're creating a lot of angle, that could be a problem. But for most amateurs, it's just the opposite. They create, right. They don't create any angles. They throw the club out and they have no lag coming down, and with irons, they don't compress it. And so in driver, they don't create speed because they pitch it out early. So what I'm showing in that dance move is how to take the club back wide and then actually have it drop and get more narrow on the downswing, as opposed to going narrow and then wide.
Right. No, I totally agree. I don't quite understand the full throttle on what we're seeing there with the width coming down, right? You know, you see like an ulnar deviation and throwing it, you know, this way. I agree. I see people come in here and they're too wide, right? They don't, most amateurs don't have enough shaft lean and those kinds of things through impact. So when you start teaching that downswing and getting a little narrower, getting the right elbow to travel a little deeper, you know, in front of the hip and carrying that, the handle up a little more forward. Yeah. I mean, I think most amateurs are going to sign up for being a bit more on the narrow side versus wider and throwing it.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? I mean, these things we swing, and it takes me, let's keep going on this US Open track. This is fun. And because that's one that's a great point that we see a lot on Instagram. Here, another one, and this, I'm going to bring this guy in because I miss this guy. I mean, I miss DJ. God bless. I mean, Dustin Johnson. Pete DJ was my favorite golfer of all time, I think. I just love the guy. Yeah. And his game is nowhere near what it used to be. And look, live whatever it is. I mean, DJ's is a shell of himself. But I go to this U.S. Open champ, and he should have won two in a row. He should have won champs, too. That was crazy. But you see that left wrist. Left wrist is flexed, right? Left wrist flexion. That is something we hear a lot. Are we going too far in this industry right now? And, hey, get that left wrist bowed and then keep it bowed and turn and hit it?
Dude, you know me, Travis. I 100%. Look, the left wrist bowed, there are some great players that do that. Obviously, DJ was a great player. Victor Hovland has his wrist bowed. But by and large, when amateurs try to do that, they don't have the strength or the rotational abilities to take a super shut face and be able to clear as much as a DJ, right? Or Victor. Is that who you're showing? Is that Victor?
Victor right there, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I feel like it's much easier to do it like a Hogan or Freddie Couples or even a John Daly, Bubba Watson. The list goes on and on of great players who didn't have this massively flexed or bowed lead wrist. So I would encourage amateurs not to do it like Vic. I mean, look, I love Victor's pivot and his rotation and all of that. And DJ classical moves, but sure. I feel like it's easier to have the wrist either flat or just a little bit of cup in it. And if you combine that with a stronger lead hand grip at address, it's actually okay. The face is still, it's still pretty square, even with a little cup in your wrist, as long as you have a strong grip.
Yeah, before we came on, I was talking about, I went and played three rounds of golf. Up in Myrtle Beach, which I never do. And I get my, you know, if I try to flex the lead wrist, I definitely hit it. I definitely can't open up enough, you know, like I can't get enough open to really stabilize the face. So I tend to hit it better knowing that I can't open up. I tend to hit it a little bit better with my left thumb a little more underneath, you know, underneath the shaft and a touch of extension at the top. And I know I'm going to get a little flexion coming down.
Right.
Or a little more flexion coming down. But doing it at the top is a big ask. Now, I will say, is it fair that getting a player like that, okay, so at the top, getting a player to feel a little more flexion, not fully flexed, right? Like I see videos where it's like, man, these people are going to break their left hand. Like this yeah. left, like they're trying to physically flex, I mean, actually flex the wrist. And there's a difference between trying to get a little, like a little less extension, maybe a little more flexion versus actually being flexed. And you look at Dustin, I mean, he's flexed. You look at Victor, he's flexed. I remember I put on the, what's that tool that, that we see a lot? Cause I'm drawing a blank.
I don't know, actually. I don't really use gadgets that much. Yeah. There's a few I like, but I just feel like it's for the
I'll think
part,
of it. It's a but anyway, time. I put it on and I couldn't, hey, Lucas, holding the club, I couldn't get my wrist in full flexion. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it hurts my wrist. Like I don't have big bones and like my wrist and stuff, when I go extreme flexion and try to hit a golf ball, for whatever reason, it stresses my wrist and forearm. I tried that too at one time just to see if I could do it like DJ. But I physically was painful. So I stopped doing it and I couldn't create speed because you talked about ulnar deviation earlier and having your wrist, you know, on the downswing losing angle. Okay. I feel like the more my wrist is flexed at the top, the more likely I am to lose angle. Okay. As opposed to if it's an extension a little bit, and radial deviation, I can create a little bit more lag coming down. So for me, that was a power move that when I went major flexion, I just couldn't achieve the club head speed that I wanted. So I went away from it.
What's Victor like? You've worked with him.
Oh, Victor's very sharp, very curious guy, not just about golf. He's curious about life. So I really enjoyed my time working with Victor. We still text. I'm concerned a little bit about Victor, the trajectory of what's happening, you know, with his game. He's still world class, clearly. But it was a joy to work with. I hope he finds his way. I do, Travis. He's a good kid.
Yeah. No, I do too. I've known Victor a little bit, and he is a great young man.
Yeah.
I guess as a teacher, my concern would be shared because we know when you're jumping around like that, man, you're messing with the genius a little bit inside, right? And Victor's a genius. He is. He's a genius golfer. And so, I worry about that. I hope he settles in. I hope he finds peace in what he's doing and builds on, you know, great golf and has a run where we don't feel like it's being changed every, you know, 4 or 5 months and he's searching and, you know, that's a tough spot to be at any point in playing golf for any level, but in particular a PGA Tour player that's doing this for a living.
Yeah. We've seen other players go down the rabbit hole of mechanical, overthought. Like we saw David Gossett lose their way. Ian Baker Finch. We've seen, to some extent, Michelle Wee kind of lost her way in the prime of her career. Yanni Sin, same thing. So I would just encourage Victor to be careful. That, like you said, the genius, he's got, he protect his talent. I mean, for somebody to come in and just say, Victor, let's go back. Let's look at the U.S. Amateur when you won. Let's look at when you were playing your greatest and best golf. What were you doing then? What were the swing thoughts and feels? Let's maybe go back to some of that and try to recreate kind of what some of those feels were. And we did that a little bit, Travis. He's not far off. I think some of the extreme short game, stuff that he was doing maybe fed into some of the full swing mechanics. I haven't seen Victor hit recently, but I think he's gone away from some of this, extreme, leaning left, in short game, but, he'll find it. He's too good. He'll find his way back.
All right. Let's take a quick break. And I got another, U.S. Open chant to ask you about after this. If you're like most golfers, you blame yourself when you miss a short putt. So after you hold back the urge to throw your putter in the lake, don't do that. You try to fix your putting stroke. How long does that last? 1 week, one round, one hole? There's a company called Lab Golf that doesn't think you should be blaming yourself. That's because all putters have this thing called torque, which means the putter face is trying to twist during stroke. So you grip it like a snake. What Lab Golf did is they figure out how to make putters with no torque. They call it lie angle balance. And you have to feel it to believe it. I did. The Lab Golf putter, you don't have to use a funny putting grip to try to keep the face square. You can putt it any way you want because Lab Golf putter stays perfectly square by itself. It's effortless. To see how much easier putting can be, head over to labgolf.com. All right, U.S. Open. You know, it's funny. I go back to my youth. I asked you this earlier. What was your favorite? And Augusta certainly has always been close. But I go back to my childhood, and man, the U.S. Open just it was speaking to me when I was young. I dug it, man. The production, the horns, you know, and they were. I mean, goosebumps, and man, I got fired up to watch the U.S. Open. I think they lost their way a little bit, you know, and some things that that kind of went down, Mike Davis and whatnot. But you know, it's funny. It's a different world now with everybody has an opinion in social media, and I think the idea of the rough and a 300-yard par three it sounds like one of the holes is going to play this week. Like I get the identity of the U.S. Open and I appreciate it, right? It's the sternest test. You're going to see things that you normally don't see and they push the limits. And I appreciate that. I'm just not sure how well that resonates in today's climate, given everybody can reach millions of people with their followers and going viral. And I just don't know. You know, like, I just feel like maybe the U.S. Open just kind of lost its teeth and its purpose a little bit in the way they like to set up their courses.
I mean, yeah, that's interesting. I think if you look back at last time it was played at Oakmont in 2007, which I have another this is a side story, Travis.
Well, tell me an Oakmont story. I love Oakmont.
Well, it's about me. So I made it through local qualifying in 2007, right. And I went to sectionals. And it was at Oakmont that year.
Oh, wow.
And I shot 66 in sectionals. I was going to be in the U.S. Open, basically. Wow. But I got my ball. This is a good lesson for everyone that plays competitive golf, okay? I was playing the same ball and the same number as Dudley Hart. And we marked it. We marked our ball in the same dimple, okay? We got our balls switched, okay? And I shot 66 and therefore got DQ'd. Because he and I switched our balls up, and we knew it. The dimple was just I filled the dimple in all the way, and he didn't fill it in all the way. So when we looked at it really close, we discovered that the ball was different, and we got him switched, and so I got DQ'd. So long story short, I would have been in the U.S. Open at Oakmont when Angel Cabrera won, and he shot five over. So the last time it was played at Oakmont, five over won. And so is that this year they're talking like it might be over par again.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you know, this golf course is no joke. For me, once a year, I sort of like to see even par through 72 holes as a great score. Because it rarely, you know, as you know, it's rarely even par as a winning score.
Right.
And I think it's going to, I mean, if you shoot even, maybe two over might win this year.
I agree. I don't mind it. No, I don't mind it at all. In the stern 300-yard par three seems a little.
That seems too much.
that seems a little overdone. But again, that's what the U.S. Open does, right? They're gonna push your button a little bit. So all right, I can respect that. My point is in today's climate of offense, everything's about offense.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the NBA now it's 127 to 118.
Yeah.
Like no one plays defense. And then I think the NBA is okay with that. Like the NFL, I think everything they do from a rule standpoint is about offense. You know, like a defender in the NFL, it's tough to play these days. You know, baseball. Baseball makes the bases bigger. I mean, they want more offense. And I think in golf, and I think we're just kind of been trending that way. And in social media, you know, you get beat up when a guy's hacking it out 30 yards and you see that too many times. Just feels like the U.S. Open, you know, I hope they continue because I'm with you. I want that stern test and I'm fine with pushing the envelope and a little bit of silliness maybe here or there. it's just going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Where does the U.S. Open stack with these four moving forward? I mean, if the PGA can get it together a little bit and find their identity, I'm not so sure the U.S. Open wouldn't be fourth in the next 20 years.
I mean, that's a great point. And it might be, you know, some nostalgic here, but like, remember the music on NBC when Johnny Miller would come on and they were playing the U.S. Open music around Father's Day.
It's the best.
I mean, I was playing like little, you know, Arkansas State golf tournaments, but I would stop and the music's coming on and Johnny Miller's coming on. And you know, my dad, again, we would watch that stuff. It was, I do miss the allure to the U.S. Open. Like, it's big time. And I hope they find a way to recreate, you know, that nostalgic feel that I so loved as a child.
Yeah, we're on the same page there. All right, let's look. I got one more swing here. Hold on a second here. Where is it? Is it this one here? Oh, yeah, this one. Oh, man, it's going. It's a little slower. Okay, so.
Yeah, a little in and over.
Okay, so little Matthew Fitzpatrick. Right. It's funny, you know, Fitzpatrick is U.S. Open champ, of course, and there's not many, Lucas, in today's game that take it that, you know, take it in, kind of in, a little, you know, a little in, and then, as you said, over a little bit coming down, right? Like, you don't see that a ton in today's game. Now, early days, you saw more of it. And so when you look at Fitzpatrick, player comes in, little over, you're cool with that, right? Amber, you're okay with that, or maybe you're not when you see what?
Well, the key point is in. Okay. Because if you don't go in and you go over, then you're in trouble. But again, if you look back and you name some great players that did this throughout, Bobby Jones comes to mind as the first one, in, way in and over. Arnold Palmer, in and over. Okay, Snead, in and over. In today's game, of course, Fitzpatrick does it. You mentioned, though, you failed to mention one, Scottie Scheffler.
A little bit, yeah.
Scottie's a little over, yeah, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bubba was a little over. Mm-hmm. John Daly in and over. I love that inside backswing where he rips it back, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and then the hands just dripped a little bit over in transition. But again, if everyone listening, if you don't go inside with that, then you're going to be in trouble because you will be too steep coming down.
You will be too steep coming down. Yeah.
If you don't, you're right. So if you don't get it in first, it's, and then you just go straight back and over, obviously. Right. You're going to be outside the plane, if you will, and cut across it.
I think Scotty pushes that limit a little bit.
He does push the limit, which I love that it's not like this cookie cutter swing.
Yeah.
It's like a little bit unique to him, but I like that he, you know, carves it left to right almost every shot, but he can also draw it too. He can draw it when he needs to. We saw that at Augusta.
He can do it. And that guy is doing just about anything he wants right now. I mean, it's
fun to watch.
Is it Tiger level dominance of ball striking yet? I mean, I'm not, you know, Scotty's not Tiger putting, but I mean, look, I
would love to see, like, when are we going to figure this golf sort of get everyone back on the same plane together?
Yeah.
Because right now I would love to see Neiman, you know, and Bryson and Koepka, you know, and all these guys playing with Scotty, you know, and like, I miss full field events because, yes, Scotty is completely dominant, 100% dominant, but wouldn't you like to see them all competing against each other week in, week out?
Yeah, I'd like – here's Neiman. You mentioned Neiman. Yeah. The guy's winning everything on LIV right now, and I mean, how good is he, right? I mean, his track record in major championships is not great, but he's winning everything in LIV. I love Neiman. I love watching the young man swing. And, God, I want to see Neiman play – against Scotty and Rory right now, you know, every other week, you know, not just major champions, but I want to see him play at Jack's place. I want to see him again in July. I want to see him in the FedEx Cup playoffs playing against each other. So, yeah, I mean, Neiman, and this swing here, right? God, you look at Zalatoris, and he went back down again with his back, and we know what Look at that. I mean, God.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. See, he doesn't slide. He doesn't move. He doesn't move laterally that much right there. If you saw that video, I think Will Z, obviously a great swing. I think he moves that left hip, lead hip a little bit more laterally than Neiman, but that's amazing action. Gosh, look at that side bend and scrunch.
And so that left hip driving a little more lateral would put a little more pinch, wouldn't it? He'd kind of be hanging back a touch more. Yeah.
Yeah. Puts the lumbar extension there post impact, especially a little more in Will Zalatoris compared to Neiman. But yeah, I mean, we saw, you know, Lee Trevino had a similar side bend, through the strike and he didn't have too many back issues as far as I can remember. I don't think anyway, but yeah, that's amazing action there from
it
Neiman.
Really is.
I hope to see these guys all playing again. In some form together. I don't know what the answer is. I don't, Travis, but Scotty again is dominant, but I'd love to see him squaring up with Bryson a little bit more, more than just once every, you know, four times a year. So.
All right. Last thing, a little something we call show. Travis has seen this video yet. This guy sent in a swing. I'm going to play it a couple times here so you can see it. So okay. We got that from Face On. Okay. And then we've got that one from Target Line. Some good stuff there.
Yeah. Can I see the Face On again?
Yeah. Good stuff. We got here, go a little slower here.
Yeah. It's good action for sure.
Yeah. Any thoughts? Any thoughts for him?
The quick thought there is that we talked a little bit about that face-on view earlier on creating some hip sort of motion. And I feel like his right hip especially, late in the backswing, we could have a little bit more internal rotation. So his right hip is kind of sliding that way instead of just turning and pivoting to create that window from down the line that we talked about, Travis. So, again, if you turn the hips – if he could turn the hips a little bit more this way, can you see me there?
Yeah, right here? Yeah.
So getting that hip turn, that will also allow the left knee. If you watch his left knee, it doesn't really get back behind the ball.
Right.
Let's play it again there and look at that face on view a little bit. But that left knee could get a little bit more back right now and the right hip. More internally rotated, deeper. And that would get his shoulder turned. The hands are real low. So it looks like he's only going back to about three quarters. And so I would like to see him get the hands a little bit higher and just a little bit longer backswing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny what the left knee can do. I see a lot of left knee, Lucas, where it's almost like the player is trying to hold the left knee still, you know, in the backswing.
Right.
And it's funny. And I think a lot of that comes from 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and maybe the perception was turn the upper, not the lower, right? Like it was, you know.
Oh, the X factor.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Turn the shoulders, but your lower is stable. And it's funny, like that's kind of how the era I grew up in playing golf. And, you know, over the years, I've learned to get a little more dynamic in my lower, change knee flex. And I hit the ball further now at the age of 47 than I did when I was 21, 22. Now, some of that's technology, but a lot of it's just speed and me, you know, understanding the swing better because of that lower body activity. But it's funny just telling someone, hey, let your left knee point behind the ball. Like, just go. And when they do that, they're like, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden their hip and it just changes everything.
It frees them up, like adding more motion to the side of guy today. Like, it's okay to add motion to your body in the golf swing. It just needs to be done in the right sequence. But like that lead knee, left knee is a right-handed golfer. I mean, watch Nicklaus. What's the activity in his knees and footwork of a Jack Nicklaus or Snead or Arnold Palmer? I mean, I would just encourage viewers to get on YouTube and type in some of those legendary swings and just go look for yourself at just how much movement in the lower body there actually was. And yeah, I think early 2000s, we saw Tiger Woods' crazy flexibility be able to keep the lower body pretty stationary and have this big upper body coil, okay, and then produce sort of this dynamic, crazy good transition and impact. But yeah. I think a lot of amateurs, you know, would benefit from allowing their bodies to turn a little bit more. Adam Scott, I saw Adam Scott recently talking about watching John Daly swing. He said, I'm trying to copy John Daly. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, he said, I'm trying to do John Daly's backswing with my lower body to get the club all the way back. Awesome. And I was just like, oh, man, that's really cool to see Adam Scott. So he's like, now, I don't look exactly like John Daly, but my feel is I'm trying to turn the hips as much as I can. Because as you know, when you get into being in your 40s and 50s, basically some of the flexibility is not there. So we need to turn our bodies to create length to the backswing.
Yep. That's a great spot to end on right there. Lucas Wald, we appreciate you, man. Follow him on Instagram at WaldLucas. He's also got website, lucaswaldgolf.com. Lucas, thank you, man. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Travis. Have a good afternoon, pal. See ya.